ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, titled Parikshit Cursed by a Brahmana Boy, text number 8. Kim nu bale shushurena,
Kim nu bale shushurena,
Kalina dhira bhiruna,
Kalina dhira bhiruna,
Apramatta pramatteshu,
Apramatta pramatteshu,
Yo vrko nrishu vartate,
kim
nu baleshu shurena, kalina dhira bhiruna, apramatta pramatteshu, yo vrko nrishu vartate, kim nu baleshu shurena, Kalina dhira bhiruna, apramatta pramatteshu, yovruko drushu vartate, kimnu baleshu shurena, kalina dhira bhiruna, apramatta pramatteshu, yovruko drushu vartate, Kim?
Kim?
What?
What?
Nu?
Nu.
Maybe?
Maybe.
Baleshu?
Baleshu.
Among the less intelligent persons?
Among the less intelligent persons.
Shurena?
Shurena.
By the powerful?
By the powerful.
Kalina?
Kalina.
By the personality of Kali?
By the personality of Kali.
Dhira?
Dhira.
Self-control?
Self-control.
Bhiruna?
Bhiruna.
By one who is afraid of.
By one who is afraid of.
Apramataha.
Apramataha.
One who is cared for.
One who is cared for.
Pramateshu.
Pramateshu.
Among the careless.
Among the careless.
Yaha.
Yaha.
One who.
One who.
Vrukaha.
Vrukaha.
Tiger.
Tiger.
Nrishu.
Nrishu.
Among men.
Among men.
Vartate.
Vartate.
Exists.
Exists.
Translation. Maharaj Parikshit considered that less intelligent men might find the personality of Kali to be very powerful, but that those who are self-controlled would have nothing to fear. The king was powerful like a tiger and took care for the foolish, careless persons. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Those who are not devotees of the Lord are careless and unintelligent. Unless one is thoroughly intelligent, one cannot be a devotee of the Lord. Those who are not devotees of the Lord fall prey to the actions of Kali. It will not be possible to bring about a saner condition in society unless we are prepared to accept the modes of action adopted by Maharaj Parikshit, that is, propagation of the devotional service of the Lord to the common man. For translation again. Maharaj Parikshit considered that less intelligent men might find the personality of Kali to be very powerful, but that those who are self-controlled would have nothing to fear. The king was powerful like a tiger and took care for the foolish, careless person. Om Agyanati Mirantasya Agyanatina Salakaya Chaturimilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vikshadhanitamscha हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगद्गते गोपेशा गोपिका कांता राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणाम
Swami Hari Kriye Vancha Galpadru Vyacha Kribahandu Vyacha Paridhanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivatsadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. So we have a nice verse with a short purport. So in this purport, the first statement in itself is provocative to the whole material world. That is, those who are not devotees are careless and unintelligent. So it's a blank statement. This is for everyone, applicable for all the non-devotees. They are unintelligent and they are careless, which is true. So it's also mentioned about intelligence of devotees. So we have to understand what is the significance of intelligent, what is meant by intelligence, and how to attain intelligence, how to acquire intelligence. So in Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, towards the end, Arjuna asks a very important question to Lord Krishna. That is, why living entities engage in sinful activities as if they were forced? So it's a very important question for all the conditioned beings in devotion service and not in devotion service, because there is a force that is acting upon us and we feel like we are tempted to commit sinful activities. It could be in a mental state, it could be in a verbal state, or it could be in a physical state. In all of these cases there is a push. So Lord Sri Krishna answers this question by presenting this famous verse, that is, Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajoguna Samudbhava Mahashino Mahapatma Vidheham Eva Vairina. So Krishna says that the most important enemy of the conditioned being is Kama, which is lust, born out of the mode of passion. So this point is very significant, because three things we have to avoid. One is lust, one is anger, and one is passion. So these three things are very specifically mentioned in one of the purports of Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth canto. Three things: lust, anger and passion. We can see these are actually coming from the mode of passion, the material mode of passion. Now, when we try to understand the lust in itself, it has a very varied existence in our life. It can be just a sensual activity in itself, or it could be varied to lust for anything material. And Krishna, in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, further explains what are the sitting places of lust. What are those? The mind, intelligence, and the senses. So, senses, mind, and intelligence are the sitting places of lust. So, it is a very significant point. And in this connection, Srila Prabhupada writes that the senses have a natural tendency to be attracted to the sense objects, because that's how the senses are created and that's how the sense objects are created. So, tongue wants to taste good things. It can be prasadam usually, but if you go out, if you see something, the tongue can, you know, maybe nice. At least subtly, the tongue can demand along with the mind. It is applicable to the vision, it is applicable to the touch, to the smell, taste, everything. There is this intimate connection between the senses and the sense objects. So, Lust is situated with this connection between the senses and the sense objects. More than that, then the next one is the mind. Because mind is the central point of all the senses. So on one side, we have the sense organs. So we have the sense organs which we can perceive through. But apart from the sense organs, we have the senses around the mind in the subtle form. So that is one sitting place of lust. Then the mind, because mind is the central point, because all the senses, the subtle senses, are connected to the mind. So mind in itself demands different things based on lust. So here, the final point is the intelligence also can be the sitting place of the lust. So, since intelligence is the next door neighbor to the soul, if the intelligence is affected by lust, then we are in a precarious position. So that reason this hierarchy is given, and Srila Prabhupada makes the significance of intelligence, because it is very, very close to the soul. And the mind has a tendency to trick in so many different ways. If you do a service, mind can easily trick us, say, okay, you don't have to do in such a proper way. There are shortcuts for any service. If you do that service for some time, one learns shortcuts. So doing in the appropriate way, one tend to bypass different things. So this is actually the mind is tricking. And there is no intelligence to control. So we had to be mindful, we had to be watchful of our own mind and how our mind is cheating us. Emana Durmoti, the wicked mind has brought us to the material world and it is sustaining our material existence. Sometimes the thoughts in our mind, which are not at all favorable for devotion service, but because of lust, we have a tendency to continue thinking. The thoughts are lingering in the mind and we do continue that thought for long period, and it can cause more harm to our consciousness. So this can happen while chanting or our normal time. So one has to have the ability to cut at one point. When we realize, then cut it. But that demands intelligence. Also, mind can provide us with so many plans, so many thoughts for sense gratification. But unless and until intelligence is there, we can't fulfill those thoughts. So how to do it, how to achieve, that is provided by the intelligence. So mind can come up with so many plans. Okay, I need some object of sense gratification. I want to watch a movie, for instance. The mind can say that, you know, I want to watch a movie. But how to, that is the function of the intelligence. So the mind and the intelligence work cooperatively. Now, the issue is that the mind out of lust could demand something, but if the intelligence is also affected by the lust, then that lusty intelligence would provide means to satisfy those lusts. So that is the reason Srila Prabhupada makes it very clear that when the lust is attacking the intelligence, then one has to be very careful, because that is the point of fall down. Because from that point we don't have any control. So Bhagavad Gita 3rd chapter provides the hierarchy. That is, starting from the sense objects, to the senses, to the mind, to the intelligence. And then finally it says, evam buddhya parabuddhva, that is, understanding the soul to be even superior to the intelligence. So this is the hierarchy that is given. So the ultimate honors is for the intelligence to control the mind, to control the senses. So when the intelligence is failed, then we don't have any option. Our last resort is surrender to Maya. So there is no option. So the prominence, the importance of intelligence, we have to very clearly understand. And materially speaking, intelligence has given a very prominent role in the modern society. You know, there are to measure intelligence, you know, there is IQ test. One could go, you know, maybe online IQ test, or if you have done some interviews or job interviews or something similar, you would have done some IQ test where basically the analytical ability is tested, maybe memory is tested, the ability to recognize different patterns and the subsequent patterns following is tested. But is that really intelligence? Yes, this is a kind of evidence or a kind of indication of material intelligence. However, even many psychologists say, you know, IQ and intelligence are actually two different things. It's not exactly the same. And the means of testing IQ is not so absolute. You know, it is kind of a relative method and it's not really the thing. Then, if you try to understand what is intelligence, materially, generally when we say that if somebody is intelligent, we show like this, you know, yeah, he's very intelligent. So we connect intelligence and brain. That is a normal tendency. The intelligence is connected to the brain. However, in the Vedic paradigm, we don't see such a connection. So you often, the brain is not considered a very prominent role in Bhagavad Gita or in the Vedic science as such. So according to Vedic science, intelligence is not really a property of the brain. So this is something which is interesting. So you know, we have heard from a scientist, I think John Lorber, he did studies regarding the brain and intelligence, and he came up with a very provocative article called whether the brain is brain necessary ? So his conclusion was, okay, the source of intelligence is something different from the brain. So even according to our understanding, the source of intelligence is not brain. It's not even just the material body. It is a subtle body. It is material, but it is a subtle body. It's not the gross body. Even though the brain can use the subtle intelligence, in other words, the subtle intelligence can work through our brain. Just like the soul is working through our body. Our subtle body is working through our gross body. In the same way, the subtle intelligence is working through the gross brain. But the brain is not the product or is not the source of intelligence. So this is a Vedic understanding. So as you know, intelligence is just one of the material elements. Bhumi, Rapa, Anila, Vayu, Gham, Mano, Buddhi, Revacha. So Buddhi, intelligence, is one of the material elements which helps the living entity to function in this world. So it is nothing spiritual as such. It's just a material element. And as we know, when we depart from the body, when this body changes, then the different elements merges into the universal source, the universal reservoir of different elements. So there is a whole universal covering of intelligence. So the intelligence, the subtle intelligence, actually goes back and merges with the reservoir of all the intelligence. So that is the kind of intelligence that we are talking about in the Vedic understanding. Now, when we try to understand intelligence, here Prabhupada makes a point that the non-devotees are unintelligent. So, there we have to understand what is meant by unintelligent. They may have some analytical abilities, they may have some memory. According to Nectar Devotion, the two qualities of intelligence is, one is the power to discern, to make decisions, and second, having a sharp memory. So these are considered two features of intelligence. Now, if we consider this on a material level, yes, the material people, they have these abilities to a great degree. They can make decisions. We don't know whether it's right decisions. Materially could be right to some degree. And memory, yeah, they have memory as well. So still, from the perspective of Bhagavatam, there is some intelligence which is known as polluted intelligence. So when we talk about they are unintelligent, means they have polluted intelligence. So they have intelligence, but it is contaminated, it is polluted. So there is a verse from 11th canto of Bhagavatam. I'll just quote that. Etad dwarohi samsaro guna karma nibandhanaha akyana mula parthopi pumsa sopna iva pyate. Though polluted intelligence, one is subjected to the modes of nature, and thus one is conditioned by the material existence. Like a dreaming state in which one falsely suffers, material existence, which is due to ignorance, must be considered unwanted and temporary. So only by the polluted intelligence, one is affected by the modes of material nature, and one thinks that this material existence is real, even though it is considered dreamlike. So another example it is given, that in the same purport it is given, yatha swapne shira chedam, yatha swapne shira chedam, meaning in the dream, if someone cuts our head, then we feel pain in our dream. But actually anything happened to us? No, nothing happened to us. But still, we feel pain because of our identification to the dream. So, just like in the sopna, in the dream, how we feel pain, in the same way in the material existence, we go through suffering. So, on one side, who is suffering in this material existence? Yes, we are suffering. On the other side, is it possible for the soul to suffer? Because the soul is Sachidananda Vigraha. It's completely full of bliss. So how can the soul suffer? So the point is that just like the dream, the only example we can take to explain this is just like in a dream, we may suffer in the same way the soul is suffering in material existence. And that is because of through the agency of polluted intelligence. Because through the agency of polluted intelligence, we develop this wrong perception. We have to understand when we speak about polluted intelligence, okay, there is something even subtler than that intelligence, that is the false ego, the false identification. But the immediate action on the false ego is on intelligence, and thus it becomes polluted. So, the material existence, the karmic life, is completely based on polluted intelligence, and that polluted intelligence is considered unintelligence, and that is a careless life, because one is unable to understand one's real purpose of life, can't understand the temporary nature of this world, and one pursues for happiness in a wrong direction. So this is the effect of polluted intelligence. Then there is another kind of polluted intelligence. So this is for the so-called spiritualists who are after liberation. At the same time, they do not want to worship the lotus feet of Krishna. Aryukya krishena param padam tat padatyatho avishuddha buddhaya. So this is about avishuddha buddhaya, those who have polluted intelligence. Those who have polluted intelligence, they do perform severe austerities. They try all means for liberation, but at the same time, they have no devotion for Krishna. So this is the examples of Mayavadis. They have no devotion for Krishna and they have no interest in taking shelter of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada criticized Mayavad in such a heavy way. Because they want to say that they are one with Krishna and they want to deny Krishna. So we can hear the example of Dr. Radhakrishnan. So Srila Prabhupada took Dr. Radhakrishnan as the example to bring the point of Mayavad and how they distort the actual philosophy. So when Radhakrishnan wrote the commentary to Sarva Dharman Paritejya Mamekam Sharanam Raja, he wrote that it is not that we have to surrender unto Krishna, but something which is unborn within Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada made a point that some of these commentators, they do not understand that there is no difference between Krishna within and without. For us, there is a difference between the body and the soul. Whereas For Krishna, everything is soul, everything is spiritual. There's no difference between the body and the soul. Everything is completely spiritual. So even without understanding that, Radha Krishna wrote this commentary saying one must surrender something which is within Krishna. So it makes no sense. So this is another classification of people who have no devotion for the Lord. And it is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita that they come into the category if they actually deny the existence of God, if they deny the existence of Krishna, His eternal form, His eternal qualities, pastimes, then their next life is hellish. They won't go to Brahma Jyoti or anything, or they won't even go to a higher planet, and they can't even live in the earthly planet, but they go to the hellish condition of life. So this is the result of offending Krishna. So this is the second class of polluted intelligence. One is normal material existence, just sense gratification, and second polluted intelligence is a manifestation of pursuit for impersonal liberation while denying the eternal existence of Krishna. Now, Krishna defines what is real intelligence. So in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a verse in which Krishna defines what is intelligence. So Krishna speaks about real intelligence at the end of Bhakti Yoga. So there is a Uddhava Gita. In the Uddhava Gita, towards the end, there is Bhakti Yoga, the whole section on Bhakti Yoga. And at the end, Krishna speaks to Uddhava, what is Bhakti Yoga? So he says, Esha buddhimadam buddhi manisha cha manishina yas satyam amrute neha mritya napnoti ma mritam. It's a very interesting verse. This process is the supreme intelligence. That is about bhakti he is mentioning. This process is the supreme intelligence of the intelligent and the cleverness of the most clever. For by following it, one can in this very life make use of the temporary and unreal to achieve me, the eternal reality. See the interesting point regarding the intelligence. So what is the most intelligent thing and what is the most clever thing to do? That is to attain something which is permanent using something which is temporary. So this is the purpose of the intelligence. This is the actual means of intelligence. The body, the mind, the material existence, it is temporary, but one can attain something which is permanent. And Krishna says, in the very life, in the same life, one can attain Krishna himself. So Krishna defines this is the real intelligence. So here, there is a beautiful purport to this. I'll read that. One should see all things as expansions of the Supreme Lord's potency. And thus, with speech, mind and senses, one should offer respect to all things without minimizing any living entity or material object. Since everything belongs to the Lord, everything ultimately should be engaged in the Lord's service with great care. A self-realized devotee tolerates person's insult and does not become envious of any living entity, nor does he see anyone as his enemy. We can see even in this, especially in this context, we can see these qualities in Maharaj Parikshit, that he never considered personality of Kali to be his envy, nor did he become envious to the personality of Kali. So this quality is very significant. And next is, he used, Maharaj Parikshit propagated Krishna consciousness and he used everything in service of Krishna. So this is real intelligence. Next in the purport is mentioned, the primary activity of Maharaj Parikshit, that is propagation of devotional service of the Lord to the common man. So that is the activity of real intelligence. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 5th chapter, it is mentioned, Yoga Yukto Vishuddhatma Vichidatma Jitendriyaha Sarva Bhutatma Bhutatma Kurvanapi Na Lipyate. So it is mentioned that one who is in devotion, who is a pure soul, and one who controls his mind and senses is dear to everyone and everyone is dear to him. Though always working, such a man is never entangled. So here, the Vishuddhatma is translated as a purified soul. And the further explanation given on Vishuddhatma is that purified soul means a soul whose intelligence is purified. So a soul with pure intelligence. So for such a person, it is a very important point is mentioned that he is Sarva Bhudatma Bhudatma. So he has compassion for all living entities. So here Maharaj Parikshit is showing compassion by propagating Krishna consciousness. In the same way, the real intelligence is that he has compassion for living entities and he is ready to propagate Krishna consciousness. So the prime example is Srila Prabhupada, a pure devotee who had compassion and who was propagating Krishna consciousness. So the recommendation here is for all of us is to be part of the Sankirtan movement, to preach Krishna consciousness. In fact, we know from Srimad Bhagavatam, what is the highest intelligence? Krishna Varnam Kasha Krishnam Sangopangasta Pashadam Yajnai Sarvam Sankirtana Praya Yajantihi Sumedasa. So it is very well connected to Mahaprabhu. Krishna Varnam Kasha Krishnam. So Mahaprabhu, he was Krishna Varnam means he was chanting Krishna's names always. Trisha Akrishnam. However, he had a complexion which is opposite to that of Krishna's, and that is golden. Sanga Upanga Astra Pashadam. He had his associates, he had his companions, he had his confidential associates also. And Yajna Sankirtana Praya. That is, by the Sankirtan process, by the Sankirtan Yajna, one actually worship that Lord. So this is Sankirtan movement. There is a very interesting pastime of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. One time he wanted to go from one country to another country. That country was a communist country. And he had a van full of books. So he was thinking how to smuggle these books from this particular country where they could actually freely preach to a communist country. So Maharaj, he had a plan with him. So generally it is tough because they check everything, each and everything, their body, the vehicle, everything they do, check thoroughly. But Maharaj, of course, he was wearing a karmi cloth and he was completely dressed up like a normal person. And he had a lot of books in this vehicle. And since he wanted to cross the border, he had a dog with him. He had a dog, so it looked strange. So he had his dog in the front seat along with him and he was driving and he reached the checkpoint and of course the military, they came out and they started asking questions and he said, I'm just going to the next country. And he said the first thing these people noticed was this dog. They didn't care about anything, they were completely on this dog. And according to the rule, he couldn't actually transport a dog from this country to the next. So Maharaj, he said, this is my pet dog and I'm with this for such a long time and I'm so attached to him. So I can't give up, you should let me go with my pet dog. So they said, no, it's not possible. And Maharaj gave so much of emotional presentation of the whole thing. He said, he was almost pleading and crying and he said, I have to take this. So they became stronger and stronger. The arguments became stronger and stronger and they said, no, it's impossible. So this went on for half an hour or 45 minutes. So kind of heated emotional argument. Then finally, at the end, Maharaj said, okay, I give up. Okay, I give up. You can take this dog and I will just go. So they let him go. So meanwhile, they completely forgot about the books. They didn't bother checking the whole van or anything. So Maharaj smuggled all the books. So this is intelligence. So we have to use our intelligence. So Krishna has given intelligence. So this is the right use of intelligence in Sankirtan movement. So in any situation, to preach Krishna consciousness, we have to use intelligence. We cannot wait anyone for anyone else. We have to think, how can we preach Krishna consciousness? So that is the only way we can actually spread this movement. Because Srila Prabhupada said, I have given the framework. He didn't say that I have given all the methods. The process is given, but the means to spread, that is dependent on our intelligence. So we have to pray to Krishna to give us intelligence so that we can spread this movement. So we cannot depend, okay, Srila Prabhupada, you know, what exactly we should do at this point of time. We can pray like that, but we cannot expect an answer from such and such person. We will have to work on it. So that is Yajna Sankirtana Praya Jantihi Sumedhasa. By preaching Krishna consciousness in that way, that is Sumedhasa. That is the highest intelligence that is mentioned in this verse. That is given. Unless one is thoroughly intelligent, one cannot become a devotee. So if one doesn't have intelligence, or if he cannot understand the value of human form of life, or the temporary nature of human form of life, but the value added to it, one cannot take to Krishna consciousness. One may start, but unless and until one realizes that point, one cannot stay on in this Krishna consciousness movement, because the Maya is powerful and it is very captivating our mind and intelligence. And as we know, Krishna is also very intelligent. You know, Krishna is the most intelligent. So one of the qualities of Krishna is highly intelligent, as Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu says. So it elaborates, actually Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu defines intelligence in two ways. One, in terms of the ability to make decision, and second, the ability to memorize things, memory. So Krishna, when he went to Santipani Muni for his education, he went to Gurukul of Santipani Muni, then he demonstrated the ability to memorize anything. He learned all the shastra. He just heard everything once and he could remember everything. So that is intelligence. He could remember everything. Perfect. No problem. We have problems. Even you know, after hearing many times, we have problems. If you try to memorize verses or if you read something and try to recollect, it's such a hard task. That's the reason there are teaching methods. If you go for a teaching course, there are teaching methods. Because by nature, students cannot receive so much of understanding, so much of knowledge. Say, the prime method of teaching and learning in the Vedic times was just listening, correct? People used to sit and just listen. Even in the whole Rigveda tradition, it is considered very ancient tradition that passed down just orally. Still it is going on. So it's around, currently maybe around 10,000 verses. The guru would recite and the disciple would listen, and just by recitation he would memorize. So this is the Vedic means of learning, just listen. But if you just take that approach, currently in teaching any course, that would be a failure, because students are not situated in the mode of goodness. Has an element or predominant sometimes of passion or ignorance. In that is the situation, then just a goodness method won't work. So that's the reason, you know, one need practical demonstration, you know, discussions, you know, there could be some experiential learning. So there are different things, different teaching methods. So that the students get engaged in one or the other activities and then don't fall asleep. So that is one problem many times in Bhagavatam, because it is one way, it's basically listening. It is based on Shruti, just listen, you know, one side and we listen and you know, hear, that's it. So if there is engagement, then there is a chance that one wouldn't fall asleep. Another approach is, you know, if the door is open, if the cold wind comes, then one can stay awake. That is another means of staying awake, which is also good. So that's the situation. So Krishna could memorize everything without any difficulty. So he is considered very sharp in intelligence. Then also it is mentioned when Kalayavana attacked Mathura. So Krishna had his plan. So Kalayavana was untouchable, and Krishna wanted to kill Kalayavana, but at the same time he didn't want to kill him. So this is a problematic situation. He is the Lord. He wanted to kill him. And Krishna is performing his Naralila, so he cannot just do superhuman things all the time. He wanted to act as a human being. He wanted to kill Kalayavana, but at the same time he didn't want to touch him because he was untouchable. So Krishna had his plan. What he did a most far out thing, that is, he just ran away from the battlefield. And as he knew, Kalayavana chased him. So when he chased him, he knew, Krishna knew that Muchukunda was sleeping. And he went inside the cave in where Muchukunda was sleeping. Then he just, you know, ran past him. And as Krishna knew the whole story behind it, Kalayavana came and he kicked on Muchukunda. And he had a boon that whoever disturbs his sleep, he can burn him into ashes. So he opened his eyes and Kalayavana was burned to ashes. So Krishna knew all these things, so he could make the right decision. So this is the ability to make right decision, even any given circumstance. So that is part of intelligence. So for us, we need devotional intelligence, and that is called the purified intelligence, by which we can remain in Krishna consciousness and we can preach Krishna consciousness. So how can we get intelligence? Is it something which is material? Like a high IQ equates to devotional intelligence, or has there any correlation at all? Actually speaking, there is no correlation. So spiritual intelligence is coming from a different dimension altogether. And that spiritual intelligence we get through Shastra, because we have to make any decision. Currently we have our mundane experiences, mundane thoughts, maybe mundane guidance. But apart from all this, when a Shastra is the basis, which comes through hearing, through reading, through listening, we tend to take guidance more from our Shastric understanding rather than our mundane mind. And through that we can make a difference. So that is spiritual intelligence. So the basis of spiritual intelligence is Shastra. So it is powered by Shastra. And of course, to use Shastra in the right way, we need mercy of the Lord and Guru and devotees. So it is very important that we pray to give us the purified intelligence. If the intelligence is purified, then we can control the mind, we can control the senses, we can engage ourselves in Krishna consciousness nicely. So we can pray to the Lord. It is said it is very important to attend Guru Puja. Why? Because Chakshudan Diloye Janme Janme Prabhu Sevi, he gives actually the transcendental knowledge by mercy of the spiritual master. So we are worshipping Srila Prabhupada every day, because one part is, okay, we are showing respect, and also we need transcendental knowledge, we need to understand what is Shastra, we want to purify our intelligence. So we shouldn't miss Guru Puja, because that's a loss. One time my spiritual master told, you develop transcendental knowledge by every day attending Guru Puja, by praying. So that is an essential component of our spiritual intelligence. And as we heard, what to do with this? We have to cultivate our Krishna consciousness and preach Krishna consciousness. With that we can attain perfection. As Mahaprabhu says, he is looking for preachers. He says that I am actually the gardener of the tree. Gardener of the tree. I have planted. I am the trunk. I am the branches. I am the fruits. All the tree of love of Godhead. It's all coming from me. But now I need many hands. I need many people to distribute these fruits. So Mahaprabhu is asking everyone, you come and join us. Join the parampara. So that is our mission. So I stop here and see if there are any questions, comments. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you very much, Prabhupada, for a very nice lecture.
Thank you.
We want to talk something about that potency, governing potency,
yeah,
and the subtracting potency.
Yeah.
You want to tell a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I understood what you said. It means the avaranatmika and prakshepatmika.
Yes.
Yeah. So the material energy has two potencies. One is the covering potency, and prakshepatmika, which is a kind of throwing away or pulling down potency. So, or in other words, it's a very simple principle. That is, the material energy gives us beating, beats us, and after beating, gives us the covering and then covers us, saying that it wasn't after all too bad. So one is ready for another crushing. So and after that the material energy again covers, and one time, two times happen, it's not, next time it should be okay. So again reading. So this is the combination of, you know, Avaranatmika and Prakshepatmika potencies of Maya. So these are the two Shaktis, two aspects of Maya Shakti. So by which we are happily residing in the material world.
We are inclined to do sins.
We are inclined to do sins. So spiritual purified intelligence can help us.
Thank you.
Anything further? Okay. Thank you very much. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.